Hello, I'm Luca De Giglio, and this is the Web3 in Travel podcast, where you can learn about crypto, blockchain, and how the new internet will change travel.
Okay, welcome again to the podcast. I've just come back from the ITB conference, and it was great. I had the chance to be on stage with Michele Ruber from Peakwork. We discussed which blockchains are, you know, how to choose a blockchain basically for your project. And I met many people from the Web3 and travel industry. That was a stark contrast with the WTM in London, where there was basically nothing about Web3. In this case, there was a whole room dedicated to innovation, and a good part of it was dedicated to Web3 as crypto, basically, right? Because now we have Web3 AI, and so this is not very clear anymore, but let's say crypto. Cynthia from The Travel spoke, Sam Simmons from MintPass, Michael Ross from sleep.io, and etc. So it was good. It was a good moment to meet the other people from this very small vertical, which is coming up. So the Web3 and travel vertical. And I won't go too much into the detail. A rule from Book Protocol. Now, you know, it used to be called Book Trips. Now it's called Book Protocol. Had suggested to make a call, you know, a Zoom call with all of us and discuss the ITB, but I wasn't able to organize that, and I'm pretty busy with other things. So sorry, Arul, that won't happen. But maybe we'll have other chances to discuss what actually happened there. But in general, we, you know, you go to these conferences to talk to the general public and try to explain what we're up to and to meet with each other. My home base, and I think our home base for the whole conference, was the Chain for Travel stand. They had a beautiful stand. They had beer, they had coffee, very good cappuccino. So it was like where I spent most of my time. So I want to thank them for their warm welcome. Pablo was there. Hanke was there. Ralph was there. Vlad was there also. They were really working really hard. So yeah, it was one of those moments in which you enjoy the human part of this small industries. I had this for a few years in the vacation rental space, which has always been like one of those industries where before the suit and tie, in a way, moment, right? Before it gets too professional, in a way, and there's the human aspect is still prevalent. You still feel very good about being there. That was epitomized for me at the Vacation Rental World Summit organized by Antonio Bortolotti. It's always been a great place to be in, to stay with people. I missed the last one because I kind of got out of that industry after so many years. And Great ITB. Thank you for anyone who made this possible to give a space to us. There was this lady, Leah, not sure how you pronounce it, who was moderating, and she was, I have to say, really great in that. So yeah, hopefully next year is going to be even better. So what are the news? Well, my last episode was almost a month ago, 3 weeks ago. You see what happens? You say, okay, once a week is too much. Some people told me they can't follow, they can't keep up. And for me, it was also a lot of work to do once a week. So you say, okay, I'm going to do it twice a week. And then slippery slope, right? And you do it after 3 weeks, then you do it after a month. That's the problem with not having a schedule, like a clear commitment. So 3 weeks ago. So this year, instead of having already like 10 episodes, this is only my fifth. Maybe I have to go back to the weekly thing. Anyway, what I want to do today is read together with you the Night Protocol of the Travel. It's a light paper. I haven't read it yet, and I want to read it with you. I want to, you know, again, stress the fact that I'm just kind of reacting. You know, these YouTube React videos in which you look at things and comment on them. It's not a real analysis. That would require me to read it beforehand, think about it, discuss with the travel many, you know, parts which are not clear to me, and then later make a final, you know, judgment on it. That's not what I'm trying to do here. I'm trying to read it together with you and give you a first feedback on how I see these things. Mostly I want to share with you how I analyze these things. And then you take it from there. You learn which parts have to be, you know, taken into consideration, and you do your own analysis, basically. They also released other light papers. This is the Knight Protocol. It's about bookings. Then they released their tokenomics, maybe another one too. I'll check them out later. So this is only about the Knight Protocol. Knight is written as N-I-T-E. And from what I discussed with Cynthia in the previous episode, and also when I met her in Berlin, this is mostly a way to represent Knights as a, I'm going to say NFT, but I'm not 100% sure, as a token. And there's some specific aspects of this token which make it not really an NFT, if I remember correctly. Well, anyway, let's see. Let's read it and see what they say exactly in the light paper. So this is a document from the 29th of February of 2024, and they specify that it's an evolving document which will be updated regularly. So I'm reading the last update from the 29th of February. This is it's one of those years where we have an extra day in February. So, well, it starts with the executive summary, and it already shows that I was wrong. It's not about only Knights. It's more like a protocol for booking in general. The interesting part is this paragraph. The Knight Protocol, an open standard protocol for the vacation rental industry, is a collective opportunity and open invitation to solve the problems they mentioned above, this usual, you know, vacation rental problems of centralized platforms. Emerging technology can address challenges at three levels: infrastructure, services, and booking transactions. As I was thinking only booking transactions, but this is much wider, which collectively will provide an open and accessible source of truth that enables direct connectivity, efficiency, and new opportunities for all industry participants. Most importantly, any company can access and build upon the Knight Protocol. And in the rest of the executive summary, they make clear that this is a call for standardization, a call for, you know, a new protocol which we can all share. And you may remember in the previous two episodes when I analyzed Camino Network, it was kind of the same call. So let's have one protocol. Let's all share the same way, you know, to communicate data, and we're gonna have a better life, an easier life, right? And I was mentioning this comic strip called XKCD, where one strip is called Standards. Let me repeat that. So the title is How Standards Proliferate, and see AC chargers, character encodings, instant messaging, etc. And then there's three boxes. One box is situation. There are 14 competing standards. And then there's a guy and a girl talking, and the guy says, 14? Ridiculous. We need to develop one universal standard that covers everyone's use cases. And she goes like, yeah. And then the next box is situation. There are 15 competing standards. So why do I say that? But because if we manage as an industry, in this case is vacation rental industry, but in general in the travel industry, to actually have one standard based on Web3, we would really see an explosion in terms of liberated value. Now the value is captured, it's siloed, we will liberate a lot of value and everybody will be better off, almost everybody. Now, the problem is always that who comes in and says, let's do the new standard, and then you go like, why should I go with you? I'm gonna, you know, do it myself. So it's good that we start having these kinds of attempts. We have Camino on one side, which is more like in the travel industry. Now we have DTravel doing more for the vacation rental industry, much smaller vertical, higher chances probably to convince that specific vertical, because there's less people involved and it's also a newer industry. But it's really good that this is happening. Now, will we have one specific standard? We will have many standards. As I was saying, the big difference from Web 2 is that Web 3 is already based on standards. Now, Web 2, and I'm sorry if I'm going on a tangent here, I'm not reading the protocol yet, but we're going to get to there. Web 2 is based on internet standards, HTTP, SMTP, FTP, SSL, etc. So very kind of, unless you use the standards, the internet doesn't work, so Web 2 uses them. Web 3 has a new layer of standards, and if the travel industry uses them, we already have standards, which is great. Now, on top of those, let's say, crypto standards, we can build new ones, right? Like the Knight protocol here I'm reading. So that's a good direction. I'm really happy we're talking about standards and we're not talking about our startup is going to capture the vacation rental market and then we're going to sell, you know, go do an IPO, and anybody who invested early, which is probably VCs, makes all the money. That's understandable. That's how startups work. But it's really good that we are talking, instead of that, we are talking about protocols, because we need protocols. If we have protocols, everything changes. So let me go back to the paper. So I keep reading. Collective ownership is critical to the industry-wide adoption of the NAI protocol. The NAI protocol will utilize TRVL, which is the token, a blockchain-based utility token, to enable fair and open participation through shared governance. In addition, the TRVL token will also be used to incentivize growth by rewarding participants who contribute time and resources to the protocol. So about this paragraph, before you adopt a standard, you want to know that nobody is actually owning the standard and is going to make all the, you know, extract all the value of it just because they launched it. And so we have tokens now which allow to distribute this ownership in a more, I would say, concrete way, because the tokens can capture the value created by the standard. And if you own these tokens, you will capture the value yourself. Now, the question with tokens is always the same, and this is an unsolved problem. Let me go back to Bitcoin. Bitcoin is the first one. It was launched in, Bitcoin maxis will tell you immaculate way, like the Virgin Mary. It just came to the world and everybody had the chance to own some Bitcoin from the beginning. And that's true. You could have, you know, bought Bitcoins for 10 cents each. So we all had the chance. That was like, it's not theoretical, it's true. But now let's say that tomorrow Bitcoin becomes the world currency reserve. Can we actually say that it's a fair way than gold or other ways? Well, then you say, okay, theoretically, everybody could have had Bitcoin early on, but many people didn't know about that. Many people didn't trust it. Some degenerates bought it early or mined it early. So the distribution of Bitcoin is not today fair in a way. It's fair under, you know, the assumption that you are free to take your decisions. You didn't want to buy it. Now you don't have any, or you have a little bit, and somebody has thousands of them because they moved in early. But it is not well distributed. Now you could argue it's getting better distributed as people buy it, right? Still, I'm not sure that a Bitcoin standard would be fair. There would be so many what we call whales who become billionaires just because they bought it early. On the other hand, you could argue, yeah, but it's the same with gold, or it's the same with any ownership in the real world. It tends to be, it's never been completely, you know, distributed properly since the beginning. There's no one single cryptocurrency which could say that. Even Ethereum, there was a pre-sale, you could have bought it, but, you know, who knew it? I was in Bitcoin before Ethereum. I didn't even realize Ethereum existed, and I got in later. So to go back to what the protocol is saying here, The token is the distribution mechanism. But the token, in the same way, is not in the hands of everybody, it's now in the hands of very few people, which were early. I mean, you can buy it, so you can, you know, if you wanna, if you believe in this protocol, buy the token, so you're gonna be able to capture more value than others. And ideally, what I'm trying to say here is that ideally, or maybe what I'm trying to say is that if the distribution of this token, and I don't know it, we will see this in tokenomics in the next episode if I do it, if the distribution of the token is too concentrated, or it's not in the hand of everybody who uses the protocol, then some people will say, you know what, if I join this protocol and the protocol is successful, I'm not going to be able to capture the value, somebody else will. Now, I have to say, at this stage, this is not true. Go out, buy $100, buy $1,000 of this token, and you're part of it. Yeah, some people will have more, but you know, that's not the point. And of course, they're saying, if you use the protocol and you are part of it, you're going to earn those tokens. That's the idea behind it. Let's distribute the token to people who make the protocol a success. And I'm inclined to say that's the right way to do that, because it's still very early. So if 10 years from now, this becomes the vacation rental protocol, and you say, oh, come on, I don't have tokens, and some people have more than that. Yeah, but today you can have it. It's not difficult. Tokens are very cheap compared to what they will be if the protocol is successful, right? And the token is like 7 cents of a dollar right now. If this protocol becomes the vacation rental protocol, we can be pretty sure the token is going to be much more, right? So today is a good moment to bet on this protocol if you believe in it and buy the token. You do have the chance to capture value. And as I was saying, and I'm saying this in defense of the travel, there's no recognized way to distribute a token in a fair way which avoids concentration at any level. Like, imagine if before launching a protocol, you send 10 tokens to anybody who's in the vacation rental industry. Okay, you did some kind of fair distribution. That's of course not possible because people don't have wallets, but let's say you do that. What happens next? Well, some people will ignore it. Some people will sell them because they don't believe in the token, and you're going to have concentration again, because concentration of tokens is a function of how much people believe in it, also how much people are involved in cryptocurrencies, and also how much money people have. Some people are ready to risk $1,000, some people are not, right? So, I mean, I don't see a better way than what they're doing, trying to distribute this token as much as possible. So, we'll learn more in the tokenomics, of course, about that. Let's go ahead. So the future of the industry depends on openness and collaboration. Those who join forces to adopt and build the NIGHT protocol have a unique opportunity to reduce costs, increase choice, fuel innovation, and lead the industry to a path that benefits all stakeholders. It's the same concept, basically. You know, let's build it, and everybody's gonna be better off. Even if you don't have a token, I would argue. So problems. There are two critical challenges. One is the lack of data standardization. We know it very well. Let me read this. Technology providers serve many different roles within the vacation rental industry, such as property management systems, online travel agencies like Airbnb and Booking, channel managers, pricing tools, and much more. Each provider has different ways of referencing and describing vacation rental properties and their attributes. This lack of standardized language and data has led to non-standardized APIs and disagreements on fundamental data definitions all industry participants rely upon. Fragmentation hinders seamless communication and integration between platforms, leading to inefficiencies and misunderstandings between systems. And then there's a quote from VRM Intel. Because APIs are not standardized, the complexity, learning curve, and expense of implementing and maintaining API-driven connections with software systems create a significant barrier to entry for emerging third-party technology companies. And there you have the answer. Why don't we have a standard? Because some people don't want it. Why? because if you don't have a standard, it becomes too expensive and difficult for, and I'm quoting, emerging third-party technology companies. The fact we don't have a standard is wanted by the incumbents. It's like banks. It's so hard to be a bank. Banks are really hard to run. It's a nightmare to be a bank. But once you are a bank, you are in a golden cage. You're making lots of money with very low quality service because you are protected. So the question is, will we find a way to break these monopolies, these silos? And people have been proposing standards forever, but there's this very big power against them. So yeah, let's see. I don't know if we'll find a way. Now we have a new kind of web, which is based on standards. So maybe these new standards will make it possible. I don't know. I had this, this problem is very clear in my mind. 3 years ago, I had a panel. You can still find it on Trips Community YouTube called The Protocol, an open protocol for listings, calendars, and reviews. And that was with Sebastian Grosjean from BookingSync, Pierre-Camille Amana from SmartBnB, Andrew Jones from, I think, IPRO Software, and Stefano Baralli, an ICT professor. So this problem is very clear to me. It's nothing new. The question is how big the effort has to be to actually be successful. And again, today we have Chain for Travel trying, Travel trying. Let's see if these are big enough efforts. I really, really hope so. So when I'm reading this Knight Protocol light paper, they talk about closed systems, there's connectivity challenges, it's difficult to connect, you know, these softwares with each other, there's no interoperability, and there's lack of innovation. I was making this case very clearly in Trips Community white paper, saying the fact that it is so hard for new companies to come in and do something because they have to beg to the big, you know, the big platforms to get the data, it kills innovation. And I was saying Airbnb and Booking, well, let's talk about Airbnb, because Airbnb really innovated at the beginning, right? It created something completely new, but then it stopped innovating. And now you get these big updates from Airbnb where, like, this is our biggest update in years, and you read what they have updated, and there's basically nothing. It's like, you know, reviews now are lower in the page, or you can search reviews, or other very minor changes, because they are not in the position to need to innovate too much. It's going too well, and any disruptive change can be too dangerous, right? So they have, again, remember that any company which is on the stock exchange has a fiduciary duty to maximize profit for the shareholders. That's the law in the United States. So they have to make money. That's the bottom line. They can't really disrupt themselves. And surely they cannot take any step into the direction in which, for instance, they open the door for innovation from other companies, because they could be disrupted themselves. Okay, then we go to the next page, which is solutions. And well, it's the usual things we discussed many times. So if we have a unified source of truth, it's just better for everyone. There's one interesting part, which is the following. It will also enable participants who provide data access to turn the current cost centers, storage of data, into profit centers by getting paid network fees for data access. That's something new. And let's see if they talk about it. I think so in the next pages. So next page is protocol design. Let's read it because this is new stuff. Protocol design. The Knight protocol has three main components. One, Knight tokens. Knights. That's how they write it, NITES. A smart contract standard to represent property knights as tokens on the blockchain. So it's a new standard. As I was mentioning, this is not ERC20 tokens or ERC721 or 1155 NFTs. It's something new. So we'll see this a bit later. Then we have number two, Dask. An industry-driven, flexible, general, simple, and future-proof domain-specific knowledge representation language, DSL, to describe real estate properties and their rental conditions. Basically, imagine an XML or a JSON file, so a text file which says night, so a check-in is called arrival, check-out is called departure, kind of property is called apartment, villa, etc. So we have a standard for defining the specific listing. And then number three, night interface, which allows vacation rental operators to both create digital wallets and sync their property data to the night protocol. So an interface, basically. The above components comprise a system that ingests vacation rental property data, which vacation rental operators are then able to share with applications such as OTAs, PMSs, analytic engines, aggregators, search engines, reputation explorers, or any application connected to the protocol for whom the data is relevant. Permission to access the listing data is controlled by the vacation rental owner or manager. Okay, so basically, but I see already that they're gonna go a bit deeper in the next chapters. Basically, three things: the tokens, which represent the night, Dask, which is a way to represent the listings, and the interface, a way to interact with those. One particular aspect here I want to discuss. Permission to access the listing data is controlled by the vacation rental owner or manager. That's always a bit a question for me in general on blockchains. So own your data, that's the concept, is like own your data and allow who you want to use your data, and if they use it, they charge for you. The question is always, how do you store this data and how do you give access to it only to who you want to give access to it, and how do they pay for it? So let's see if they describe that. Because in general, if data is on the blockchain, it's open. Everybody can take it. So I think I understand this in the following way. So you have the previous system in which data is closed, managed by the platforms, and they give you access through APIs, which means you ask for permission and sometimes you pay for it. Then you have the very open blockchain approach in which data is on the blockchain, data availability is open to anyone can read. And then you have this approach they're mentioning, in which data is somewhere and you, the owner of the data, give access to hit to whom you want at the price you want. And that's something I don't know yet. I don't know if ZK proofs are in some way involved, but let's see what they say. So let's go to the next, where they explain the night tokens in more in detail. Okay, some new concepts here. First of all, the token is actually an ERC-721, which is the classic NFT standard, right? Where every NFT is completely different from any other NFT, which means every night is a token, an NFT, and it is specific to that property. Okay, so if you book three nights in Villa Green, you have three tokens. Each one of them represents one night, so the first night, the second night, the third night, so they have a date, of course, say 10th of August, 11th of August, 12th of August, and they only are valid for that specific villa. So it's basically very granular, right? And being an ERC-721, so your classic NFT, it works on every other protocol. That's, we go back to the idea that because we have new standards in Web3, we can use them. So now DTravel creates the night protocol, sorry, the night tokens as an NFT. They can leverage, so they and we can leverage the existing infrastructure. We can leverage exchanges, for instance, to sell these nights, right? We discussed this in the past. Now, there's an aspect that I didn't expect here, which is every property has its own deployed NT contract. NT here being night, I suppose. It's the first time, I meet this. NT is probably the night protocol contract. This contract can be deployed to any EVM compatible blockchain. Okay, so there's a lot of new there's a lot of new things here in just a paragraph. And so let me think about it. You deploy a contract specifically for a property. Okay, so the NFT is linked to it in a very, very clear way. And all right, that makes sense. The other one, it's even more new to me. Like, the contract can be deployed to any blockchain. So you may have a property manager on Ethereum. Okay, you won't have anyone on Ethereum. It's too expensive. We have on Polygon. And then somebody else will be on, I don't know, Arbitrium, Base, or Gnosis, etc. And they say, okay, of course, you can be in different blockchains. However, to ensure a single source of truth, every property will have only one deploy contract. Okay. And now, of course, that brings the question, how do they talk to each other, etc.? But I guess we have to read farther. So let's read the last paragraph. Using this approach, whether a night is booked can be determined by checking whether the corresponding token is owned by someone other than the property manager. Basically, I suppose that if the night is owned by the property manager, it's not booked. Furthermore, whether a night is available through a given operator depends on whether the current token owner authorized the operator to transfer the token to their behalf. So yeah, you can, you know, the property manager issues a token, he sells the nights, it sells the night, and then the owner of the night, which is a guest, can give permission to, let's say, an NFT marketplace to sell it. So basically, it lists it. Anyway, all this information is public on the Knight protocol. Okay, next chapter, Dask, the unifying language for the vacation rental industry. Something new here is the paragraph which says collaborative and industry-driven. Rather than being yet another standard produced by just one entity and hardly adopted by any other entity, Dask is the result of a collaboration between multiple entities in our industry, committed to creating a standard that suits their needs and adopting it to enjoy its benefits. That's really important. I mean, if this is not just an effort by one company, but it's already part of a bigger effort by many companies, then the chances for it to become a standard is much higher. So it would be interesting to know exactly who's behind this and who's going to push it, right? Then, of course, they say general and simple, standards compatible, legacy compatible, and future-proof. And basically, yeah, the standard will work also with previous technologies and future technologies. It's a level of abstraction which makes it resilient, basically. And then they say the first night interface to the night protocol is the travel direct. So basically, that's something we see a lot in general. It's like you create a protocol and then you create the first implementation, because otherwise this is just theory. So they have the practice. You don't have to see this as the travel launching a protocol. Maybe you have to see it as the industry launching a protocol and the travel being one of the main users of it, even if it's, you know, if it comes from the travel, but see it from like this, because this is something bigger than just a company. It's a protocol, right? So through the travel, we can already see one implementation, and it's in the travel direct. Basically, when you use the travel, you're using the travel direct. Again, the big question is always the same. Is this protocol going to be adopted? It always ends up there at the end. So let's see, protocol listing data flow, that's the next chapter. And they show you how a property manager gets on-ramped in the protocol, and it stores part of the data on-chain and part off-chain, right? Off-chain meaning not on the blockchain. So normally it's on servers, but here they mention IPFS, Filecoin, Airwave, which are decentralized solutions for data storage. And then the OTAs and the PMSs and the channel managers and the meta searchers, they pull fetch data on demand. Now, remember when I was wondering how can you give access only to who you want and charge them for that. That doesn't answer the question, because if the stuff is, the data is on blockchains and let's say IPFS, anybody can get the data, can access for free basically. And then they show it, so that's a question which stays out there. How do you kind of limit access to your own data, and how do you charge for it? You as a user, you as a property manager, let's say. And then, okay, they explain how the traveler makes a booking and information is changed, the data is changed on chain. And again, these players like the OTAs can read this new data. Next chapter, how this is different from Web2 systems today. Okay, there's a couple of diagrams. They explain the usual concept. Today you have Airbnb, you have Booking, and you have others, and you have to ask each one of them to get access via APIs to their siloed data, right? While in Web3, everything is in one place on the blockchain, or IPFS or Airwave for bigger data, and anybody can access it anytime. So it's basically one big open API. The next chapter is TRVL token, promoting Knight protocol decentralization. And it basically says, you know, instead of having one single leader deciding about a platform, we let the users decide about that. And the token is a governance token. And one thing I would like to see actually is the delegation. Basically, in DAOs, we have seen that allowing everybody to vote doesn't bring really quality decisions, because most people are not informed enough. You know, it's not like everybody has only one kind of token. We have many tokens, and how do you follow all those decisions? How do you vote on a decision, often technical, if you don't have the time or even the capability to understand it, right? So what is happening recently is that we delegate our tokens to delegates who have more time. They follow more closely the protocols and then they decide. So that's something which I think is missing here. It's something in the right direction. Like, a protocol should not be governed, of course, by one person or one company. That would probably make it not even a real protocol, or have, you know, a certain amount of risk with it. Decentralizing governance to the people doesn't mean that there are no risks. There are different risks, and yeah. Well, again, it's a new attempt to decentralize things. So it's in the right direction. Okay, next chapter, I'm gonna read this because I picked at it and there are new concepts. Benefits of using TRVL token in the Knight protocol. Distribution access. Third-party applications can access the Knight protocol API by paying in stablecoins or TRVL, query and distribute property data. That's new. I mean, instead of paying APIs to centralized parties, you pay the API to the protocol. Then the amount paid by third-party applications is based on the amount of properties queried and the source of properties queried. Okay. Operators can put a price on access to listings they manage. This includes free access. If access is paid, operators split the earnings with integration partners they are connected to and the Knight protocol. Integration partners can stake TR. Okay, let's go to the stake a bit later. Again, the question is, how do you close the access? How do you make people pay? I still haven't seen this explained. Okay, let's go ahead. Integration partners can stake TRVL to improve their share of earnings. Integration partners will also have to stake TRVL as a form of security guarantee for the honest behavior in validating legitimate listings and bookings. Okay, this sounds a lot like staking to keep a blockchain running. We will probably need more detail to understand how this works. Of course, from the point of view of the tokenization, of the tokenomics, I'm sorry, staking is good because it kind of stops tokens from being sold. It's not clear right now from the point of view of, you know, of the protocol, how they would kind of, for instance, kept honest because their tokens are staked? Is there any slashing mechanism, etc.? I'm reading. After receiving access to property listings, third-party applications can charge transaction fees for successful bookings. Operators will know how much a third-party application intends to charge before getting access to the listing data. So basically, we are monetizing here the data. Instead of paying the centralized players, we pay the protocol itself and the protocol owners. Then they talk about how to incentivize cryptocurrency transaction, being the Travel Direct, the first on-ramp to the NAI protocol. There's incentives and discounts when you pay in crypto, and even more if you pay with the TRVL token. Gas usage fees. Gas fees are paid each time the new NAI tokens are minted, property data is updated, or property data is queried. So basically, okay, every time you interact with the blockchain, even by reading, you pay. Again, the question is still there, how do you do that? So technically, it's an interesting question. The NAI protocol will earn a margin over the cost of gas fees on the network where the NAI tokens are minted. If gas fees are paid in TRVL, there will be a discount on gas fee paid. Financial primitives. Royalties for trading NAI tokens, lending and borrowing NAI tokens, and selling right to future booking cash flows. I'm not sure about this. So you get royalties for trading those tokens. I'm not sure what those royalties are. Maybe extra TRVL tokens. Then we have developer incentives. TRVL tokens will be used to incentivize participants within the protocol ecosystem. This includes developers, contributors, users, and more. By rewarding these participants with TRVL tokens for their contribution, such as code development, bug reporting, content creation, NAI protocol will foster an active and engaged community that collectively works toward the protocol's success. NAI protocol's developer incentive grants will be decided by the DTravel Representative Council and shared with the community. Okay, so there's basically tokens used as incentives to develop the whole thing. Next chapter is the new possibilities that the NAI protocol enables, and we kind of discuss them. There's one interesting one, which is like, anybody could incorporate listings from other operators into their websites. And that goes back to the concept in which, you know, all right, let's do the decentralized Airbnb thing, in which all the listings are on the blockchain and anybody could simply create an OTA on the fly without needing to ask listings, to ask owners and property managers to upload their listings. They are simply selecting a certain number of them and doing an OTA, maybe a niche OTA or a local OTA, etc. This breaks a very big barrier to innovation, because if we want to launch a competitor to Airbnb or Booking, you won't be able to, because you're going to have to convince so many people to create the listings on your OTA. While if the listings already are on chain, you can simply access them, maybe asking permission to the owners, but without asking them any extra work, that opens really new possibilities, doesn't it? Next chapter, why adopt the protocol? Any traveler, operator, or builder may ask, why should I care about the NAI protocol? And even if I care, why should I invest in its adoption? And the short answer is because it's good for everybody. It's the only way to get out of this total control of the oligopoly of OTAs and other big platforms in travel. And the longer answer is DEPIN, D-E-P-I-N, which stands for Decentralized Physical Infrastructure Network, which basically says we can now try to create infrastructure in a decentralized manner, which benefits everybody, and the way to do that is to overcompensate the first contributors. So we have seen this with they mentioned your Filecoin, for instance, but we've seen this with many, you know, even being a node in a new blockchain is really good. Like, let's go back to Bitcoin as usual. At the beginning, if you were a Bitcoin miner, you could do that on your computer at home, and you could get 50 Bitcoin an hour, right? Not 50 an hour. 50 Bitcoin every 10 minutes were given to miners. There were a few miners. So it was easy to make hundreds of Bitcoins with your own computer at home. And we know how much hundreds of Bitcoins are today. So overcompensation. Because if you jump on a new protocol and you have no guarantee that it's going to go anywhere, you need to be overcompensated. It goes back to what I was saying before. There's not really a way to do a fair distribution because you need somebody to start and the risk is high and the reward has to be high, or the potential reward has to be high. You cannot even say high reward because when people were getting, 10 Bitcoin a day, that wasn't a high reward. That was like less than a dollar, right? It's potential high reward, while the effort is real, right? So there's no really other way than to give a lot to the first adopters. Okay, let's go to how the travel will support the protocol. This is the next chapter, where it basically says that since the travel is behind all of this, it will do everything needed to incentivize and support the growth of the network. The next chapter is how to contribute to the Knight protocol. And it's basically if you are an operator, like to kind of use the travel, participate in the forum. I didn't know they had a forum, so they launched one a few days ago. If you're a traveler, book through the travel listings, or when you book normally, try to talk to your host and tell them about this possibility. If you're a builder, adopt the Dask language, participate in the meetings, etc. Because you can read more about that. And that was the last chapter. I think I gave you a good overview. You can read it yourself. It's not too long. There are a few posts in the forum. It is not very active at the moment, so it hasn't picked up yet. I would say in general what I said before, protocols are the way to go. We need to find a way to have one protocol adopted and everybody uses the same. How do we do that? We don't know. Can it be done by one company like Chain for Travel, one company by the travel, those companies cooperating? I don't know if they're speaking to each other. I don't know if their protocols are compatible with each other. How do we do that? There's certainly the need for a massive effort to say, okay, let's all agree that from tomorrow, that's the way we do bookings. That's the way we do data transmission. That's how listings are presented. And hopefully one day we will get to a protocol. Until then, these are good ways to start. That's how you start. You write a standard. You communicate it. You try to convince as many players as possible to adopt it. And finally, one protocol, one standard will be adopted by most of the industry. And that's going to be the foundation on which we kind of move away from Web2 as it is today. Now, we have to remember there are enemies in this. There are people who do not want the standards. They don't want a protocol because their whole business model is based on non-protocol, on siloed data. So we have innovators, we have a tectonic shift in the form of Web3. We have incumbents, which are kind of the enemies in that case. We have all the elements for an epic story, and let's not only follow it, and let's be part of it. So thank you for listening, and see you next time. And we're done. Thank you for listening to this episode. For more insights, follow me on Twitter at Tripluca, TRIPLUCA. If you enjoy my podcast and want to support it, head on to podcast.webtreeintravel.com, tree is a digit, and mint an NFT. If you want to sponsor it, you can do it at the same page. I will mention you in the podcast and your name will appear on all donation NFTs for a while. Thank you and ciao.